Welcome, everyone. It's just great to see the new faces and old faces. Is that, am I allowed to say that? Familiar faces. It's great to be here, and what a blessing. Thanks, Donnie and Ed. And so I was trying to decide what to do tonight, and Matt gave me an idea. So, Mr. Beck, thank you very much. We'll see if it's really good. But talked about just giving kind of testimony or just about who I am and how I got here. And so I don't know if you guys know much about me. It's kind of interesting to try to put this together because, it's always weird to say this, I'll turn 60 in December, and that's just such a weird thing to say. I've always been a little kid. I'm always going to be a little kid. I've told some of you, and I repeat this sometimes, but when I was growing up and someone said they were 60, I used to feel sorry for them because they were really old. And then you blink, and so I can tell you, you'll be there. It doesn't seem like it, but time goes really fast. And we kind of determine, you know, how we get here and stuff somewhat. And so I want to talk tonight with just kind of thinking, because it's not about me, although it's going to be about me, but it's not really about me. It's about what God's done in our lives. And so we can all relate. I have a radically different background than you guys have. I've never smoked a cigarette. I've never drank any alcohol. Funny stuff, I know. Isn't that amazing? So you can guess I've not smoked marijuana either, or we can go on from there. So I'm different background than you guys. God still, no matter where we're at, and it's all the same, it's a broken world. And we're broken people in a broken world. And we all have different parts of that. So I'm going to share some of the story. I got a long list here of things. I don't know if I'll go all through them. But there's what pattern you'll see is when we're younger, there's a lot of things that happen to us that we don't have any control over. And they become a part of us. And then when we become older, we can take responsibility for those things, but we have to deal with them. And they don't just magically go away. And God loves us so much. And you can see the work of God in my life, you will be able, and I want you to think about the work of God in your life, both in the past and now, just bringing you right here and in the future. So I'm going to do some fact things or whatever. I was born about 60 years ago in Greeley, Colorado, north of Denver. My dad was a pastor in a denomination or a group of churches called Church of the Nazarene. My dad grew up in the Depression, and he was a scrapper. He could pretty much do anything you put in front of him. And so he changed a bus law in Ohio for church buses. He drove around without a license, hoping to get arrested to be able to take this forward in court. He wrote a Christmas musical, which is kind of weird. And he got a PhD, among other things. So he was a go-getter and just a kind of an aggressive type person. And he married my mom out of college because he was a pastor and he needed a wife who could play the piano. And that's about all they had in common. And it was kind of sad. And so they never seemed to get along. Dad was aggressive, and my mother was just the opposite. She never seemed to grow up. And I don't mean that in a bad way. She just was kind of naive. She grew up in a very conservative background where they didn't play cards, and she couldn't wear pants. It was always had to be a skirt. I know that's just kind of weird, and maybe some of you are familiar with that or not, but she didn't wear pants until she was in her 50s. That was my mom. So, I put she was strange. And I don't mean that as an insult, but, you know, she kind of had this naive approach to things that made it a struggle. I have two older sisters. Carol's 8 years older, and Joyce is 2.5 years older. I was a nice kid. My mother called me her little Jesus boy. And I used to sing solos in church. When I was real little, they used to put me up on a table or a platform, and I used to sing Teach Me, Lord, to Wait. But my dad was a great preacher, and he really was. He just had you eaten out of his hand. And yet what he preached and how he lived didn't match. Sad. but important. So he built a church in Springfield, Ohio, and pastored several churches in Colorado and one in Kettering. When we lived in Kettering, Ohio, my mom filed for divorce. And if you have an aggressive pastor who's moving up the ranks in a church denomination and his wife files for divorce, that just doesn't go well at all. And so it really hit him hard. And I don't understand this completely, but I remember him rolling around on the ground and his pancreas burst because of the stress and the pressure and just what happened to him. And it was an ugly divorce. And my dad did whatever he needed because aggressive to get custody of children. And this was in the 60s. That didn't happen. The mother always got the kids. But he even did some interesting things as far as accusing her of being homosexual and some other things, and he ended up getting custody of us. And so while the divorce was in process, I started a school in Wilmington, Ohio, and we were in school, and it was living with my dad, and he didn't have custody because they were still working us out. She came to school and told the people, it's time to pick up my kids. And so she got us and stole us from my dad and took us off into out west. And we ended up in Kansas City in Ottawa, Kansas. My dad broke into her parents' house in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and got our address. And then he broke into that house. He got some local kid to knock on the door. And once they opened the door, he barged in and stole us back. So really fun stuff for a kid. it was traumatic. And so we went back and forth, and we ended up in, this is kind of a weird fact, but we went to 10 schools in first grade. I did. So 10 different schools in first grade. So not the way it's supposed to work. But during that time, we'd always go to church, and we lived a Christian life, both when I was with my mother and my dad. Then I put Christians in quotation marks. But it was a struggle, but that was a positive thing. And in all the turmoil and everything, it was good to go to church and go to Sunday school and have some semblance of something that was kind of solid that we could rest on in that whole chaotic time. We finally settled with my dad in Xenia, Ohio, and I was in second grade. And I would go to see my mother on weekends. And my dad was always talking bad about her. That's kind of typical things in a bad divorce. And so I had no respect for her. And I was just a second grader. And so I went to her house, and she had a room in somebody's two-story house. And she told me to do something, and I said no. And she threatened me. And so I threatened back as far as if you try to do something to me, I'm going to jump out of this second-story window. And I was a second grader, and I did. I opened the window, and I reached out, and I grabbed the thing, and my legs were hanging down, and I dropped down onto the bushes, and I walked a couple miles to a phone and called my dad, and he said, you have to go back, but you'll never have to go back again. So from a second grader, I didn't see my mother until I was 28 years old. So God hates divorce, and there's good reason he does. And so it affected me, it affected my sisters, and so it was challenging. So some of the things, I don't know, this is kind of silly, but my older sister, Joyce, and I spent a lot of time together, including doing some shoplifting, and we stole some candy at the stores. I skipped school a few times and stole some firecrackers from my dad. And I would swear a lot as a kid, was hanging out with my friends. So I was really a bad kid. So I'm just kidding, but from a perspective for me, that was bad. But, that's a kind of a turning point, and I don't know what memories are in your head, but everybody has points in their lives where they could go one way or the other. And so I was kind of at that point. If I had gotten arrested for shoplifting, if I had hung around some different people and headed in more of a different direction, but we always went to church and the youth group was important, and I thank God for holding on to me in spite of what all was going on through that process. And we moved to second through fifth grade. I went to a special, it was called Xenia Center for Educational Programming. It was an experimental school, and it was a good, and I got introduced to black kids, and I hadn't, none of that had ever happened before. I'd lived a sheltered life, and my parents were, there was a lot of racism that was going on in the 60s. And so I used, I'll tell you the story. Somebody had a G.I. Joe, and it was a black kid, a nice kid that I was hanging out with. And please forgive me for this, and I'm recording it too. But it was a G.I. Joe, and it had a cut in his face. And I said, and I'm not proud of this at all, I said, "What happened? A nigger shoot him?" And it just came out. And I apologize for saying that word, but that was just telling you about my background at that point and how I grew up. And so I got in a lot of trouble for that, as I should have, and that changed my life right there. And I ended up, I had one of my best friends at that school after that incident and after things changed was a black kid named Joey Hargraves, and we used to play Rat Patrol together. I don't know if anybody ever remembers that show, Rat Patrol. But that was a good, part of my growing experience. As long as I'm on that subject, it was interesting when I went to Taylor University in Upland, Indiana, and there was a black gentleman who befriended me, and he put my arm around me, and he took time to help me get a better understanding of what it was like to be black. I read a book called Black Like Me. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But I really appreciated that as far as him helping me. And I won't go into it, but there's lots of challenges that I became aware of that I wasn't aware of before, and some difficulties. And so anyway, I'll just mention that as far as helping me through the process. When I was in sixth grade, we moved to Fairborn, Ohio. My parents had gotten divorced by that time. My dad married a homecoming queen from Ohio State University. And she was beautiful on the outside. and we ended up with a stepbrother and a stepsister. And it was nice at the beginning, and then it just became dysfunctional and bad and sad stuff. And they ended up getting another divorce again for the second time. And so just tough stuff through there as far as blended families. The best thing that happened to me was I got a paper route in the morning. And I would get up at 5 in the morning and walk around the block. And that was the best thing that happened because it gave me a chance to sort out things. It gave me a chance to think about things and try to get a perspective on this messed up world that I was in. And I really appreciated that. I think God had a huge part in that. I loved football growing up. I love the Baltimore Colts. I don't know if you guys will know any of these names, but Raymond Berry, Tom Matty, John Mackey, Lenny Moore, and everybody knows Johnny Unitas. But I wanted to be a professional football player, and I played football in fifth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade. And in eighth grade, my coach at the end of the season took me aside, took me into his office, and he said, "Marvin, you have tremendous potential. Someday you're going to be a great football player." Ninth grade, my dad said, "Football's too dangerous. I'm not going to let you play football anymore." So there, what happened to that? Who knows what would have happened? I'm kidding. Exactly. Yeah. No, I probably would have been limping around. But anyway, I loved football, and so that never worked out. I did go regularly to church and Sunday school, and that was huge. And so a lot of my friends were Christians and had the positive influence. And I had other friends too. There was a lot of marijuana smoked at our school, and I had friends that did that and stuff. But I didn't get connected with them the same way I got connected with the people at church, and I thank God for that. And I did run track in junior high, and I think I still hold a school record because we had the 1 year where we ran what was called the 13:20, and that's three laps. And I ran that race, and I won this regional race in 3 minutes and 42 seconds. So it was a decent time. It would have put me under 4 minutes or five minutes for the mile as an eighth grader, which was good for me. I ran cross country in high school, and we went to the state finals 2 years in a row. But I was third. We had two guys that were just amazing. I ran 10:05 for 2 miles, which was my best time. Which was good, but that was a good team when the third guy ran 10:05 because the other guys were running the 9:30s that were leading our team. I graduated from high school in 3 years at my dad's urging. What was I thinking? I don't know. But he wanted me to. And so I ended up going to college when I was 17 years old. And I went to college and I just felt young. And I was younger than everyone else. I felt immature, and I struggled with that. I had two older sisters who were domineering. My dad was domineering. And so in between my sophomore and junior year at college, I packed up and went to Houston, Texas. And I went there to grow up. Kind of a weird thing, but I decided I needed to grow up. And so I got on a bus, a Greyhound bus. Those are so much fun to drive from, ride to Fairborn, Ohio to Houston, Texas. Night and day, I just remember it just being a blur. But it was just a great time. I worked in a nuts and bolts warehouse. I also worked some black gentlemen who owned a garage, Harold and Charles Sharp, Sharp Automotive. And I went there after work and I said, can I hang out with you guys and learn auto mechanics? And they let me do that. They gave me a key to the place. I would go get them whiskey because after work everybody sat around and talked, and so I joined that, didn't drink any obviously, but just a great experience. And came back, I graduated from Taylor University with a psychology degree and a minor in systems analysis, and I did that so I wouldn't have to that minor so I wouldn't have to take a language. But it ended up getting me a job in the computer field, and I worked at Continental Bank in Chicago for 2.5 years. Got married after that to my wife. And we lived there for 2.5 years, and then moved to Fort Wayne because Fort Wayne was halfway in between her family in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and my family in near Dayton, Ohio. And so, but before I graduated from high school, I took some time to answer the question, is Christianity really true? I grew up with it. It was the religion of my family. But I wanted to stop and say, is this really, you know, given all the other choices, including atheism, is this what I want to believe? And I came to the conclusion that it was true. You're never going to, you can't exhaust everything. But I looked at, I just can't believe that, to me, this world screams a creator. And so I couldn't believe that it just happened. There's just too many. One of the weird things in my mind, and this is just a quirky thing on me, the whole thing with evolution, I can't, and I don't want to get graphic here, but the male and the female with all of the plumbing and all of the things that have to work together, I just can't imagine those evolving all at the same time. Any little thing missing in that whole thing ends it all. You can't keep going. And so that's just one of the things that fascinates me. But so we moved to Fort Wayne in 1992. I worked for Brotherhood Mutual Insurance Company for 5.5 years. And then I got hired at IBM, worked there for 26 years. Great company to work for, real challenging, but real distracting too. I traveled quite a bit. I had Alaska as a territory one time. That's silly. But I had to take a trip out there because to visit that territory. It was a boondoggle trip, but it was really good to see elk. And they say in Anchorage, Alaska, you're 30 minutes from Alaska. And it's just amazing. I got there in May, got there at midnight in May, and it was totally light. And so just beautiful country. But we had three children. Right now, Micah is 30, Jan is 27, and Joel's 20. I wasn't a great dad. I was distracted a lot. And so if I had it to do over again, I'd do a lot of things differently. I do have a good relationship with my children now. I try to have a breakfast with my daughter every once a week, and my son's at once every other week, and continuing that. But there was a lot of things I would do differently. I've been married for 37 years. It'll be 37 years in September. My wife's just amazing to put up with me. I'm a selfish pig, and it's a struggle. And I spent a lot of time trying to change her, and that was just the dumbest thing I could ever do. And I've reached a point sometime to just say, I love her so much, and I'm going to serve her and just show her love. And that was the smartest thing I've ever done. It was just really dumb. The other parts, never been unfaithful to her, and come close, not physically, but just done some dumb stuff. But I thank God for protecting me in that process also. And then at some point, probably about 8 years ago or so, I ran across a verse in Luke that says, if anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his own father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life. Anybody know what it says after that? What? Kind of. It says, he cannot be my disciple. So If anyone doesn't come to me and hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And it struck me. I'd grown up with the just be a Christian, go to church. You got to have this certain part of God in your life, but you can do whatever you want. And it's about being happy, and it's about getting done what you want to do and stuff. And I couldn't reconcile this with this verse, because it basically, and it says you're supposed to hate that stuff, but you're not really supposed to hate it. You're supposed to hate it relative to your love for God. And that's the plan he has for us. And you think, well, that's selfish. You know, there's all these fun stuff out there that you should be enjoying. But we know what's that fun stuff gets us. And God loves us so much, and he loves me so much, that he's finally got me stuck on that verse to think, I need to make him the most important thing in my life. Not because he doesn't want me to have fun, but because he loves me. And I could see as I look back at all the little places that he's where I could have gone a different direction. And he intervened. And he intervened with that too. And I don't know what you're thinking, but I think you can probably see some places in your life, even right now, where he's intervening because he loves you so much. And so as I go on, I could talk for hours about this, and it was interesting. You know, you take 60 years and you think, okay, I'm going to just put it in 20 minutes. You know, there's so many different things I could tell you. One of the things I did want to tell you, though, is I know a lot of people have been really blessed, and I'm not trying to make this is an experiment, so I'm asking for your grace here. A lot of people have been saved from addiction, and I've seen addiction, and I hate drugs. I hate the monster of it, the destruction that it leaves, the power that it has, the irrationality of it. I talk to people, and I just it's so clear what's going to happen to them based on their decisions that they make, and it just breaks my heart. But and God saves people from that, and he saved people here from that, and he can save and will, and I'm so encouraged to see that he saved me from something different. I was walking around the block praying, struggling one time, and I thought, you know, I've got a lovely wife, I've got lovely kids, I've got a nice church I go to, my job's well, I have financial security, we paid off our house, I just have all of these things that I've always wanted my whole life. And I said, God, I don't need you. And I wasn't mad, I know it's a weird thing to say, but I did not need him. The things that I was striving for in life, I had. And I didn't need his help to get them. And I was so foolish there, because all of those things aren't important. And I know we think they are, and they seem important, but they don't bring happiness. I wasn't happy. I was struggling. The more things you get, the more things you have to manage, the more things break, the more things, times you put your happiness in that. But I was comfortable, and I had strived for that. God saved me from comfort. God rescued me from comfort. And the other part of this that's interesting is that, and I lost my train of thought just for a second. So, thank you. Age. Yep. 60 years old. Older people do that.
Hey, younger people do that.
They do. Okay. Thanks, Matt. The other part of this, as far as, the comfort part is that, you can strive for that. And what it had to do with is what I was considering important in life and what I was going after. So I got my train of thought back. And so I was after these things. I wanted to be comfortable. I wanted to be financially secure. I wanted to have just peace in my life and stuff. And so through this change, through this verse, it changed. And now my main thing in life is serving God. And I'm horrible at it. I'm uncomfortable all the time. The population that some of you are a part of, you guys are brutal. You guys are just I spend a lot of time trying to figure out whether people are lying to me or not. You know, it's true. Yeah. And then just all of trying to figure things out, trying to help people, trying to get inside their heads to try to make a difference, seems like what I say is clear, laying it out, and trying to do that is just incredibly difficult. And so I am so uncomfortable all the time in this because I'm so depending on God, because I don't have the strength and the wisdom to do any of this. And so I need him all the time. And I'm dependent on him. And I thank him for putting me in that position, because that is the best place for me to be, and that's where he wants me to be. And so that's my story. It's been a rocky road, and it'll continue to be. Life is hard. No matter what you do, life is hard. But following Jesus, being thankful for what he's done in my life, is absolutely the best way to live by far. Peace, joy, no matter what happens, even though I'm uncomfortable, even though I don't know, and all of the challenges and stuff, I can have peace because I trust him. And it's not my responsibility. I can just depend on him. So that's my story. I know I went long. Any comments or questions?
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Amen. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you,
Lord.
Yeah.
Know you, man.
Huh?
Now I know you.
Yeah, now you know me. So what we go, Ed.
When you were growing up in your church situation.
Yep.
And this takes me, and I don't need to step in.
No.
I had a cousin that was a minister. And of course his brothers and me to go to church.
Yep.
I know what happened to me that saved me from this to where I did not hate going to church. What, I don't know if you were ever in that position. Was there something as you were growing up in that structure?
Yep. That's a great question. A lot of people didn't have the same experience I did. I was blessed. I never actually rebelled. And so a lot of times when that happens, people rebel and they reject. I had all kinds of reasons to reject my parents. My dad was a hypocrite. He's preached beautifully. He and my mom, my second mother, the one, the Ohio State beauty queen, did a family life conference, telling people all how family should be and how marriage should be and everything right before they got divorced. They were brilliant. I sat through that, and they gave great wisdom, and people loved what they said. But so I could have, should have rebelled for whatever reason, and I thank God so much that I didn't. And so I never hated it. I went because underneath, and I thank God for this, underneath there was something strong enough to say, I think this is true, no matter what, how they're like, and no matter what they're like. And that kept me. So good question. Donnie.
With the whole automotive guys and you went and got the whiskey, what kept you from taking that drink with your buddies?
Just the way I think, it didn't seem smart. I saw them.
How old were you?
Huh? I was 20.
You was 20.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so it just, I saw them drink. I saw them get started high. And I just, why would I do that? And it just, it's still, you know, and I don't drink socially. I don't have any problem with anybody drinking under, God doesn't say we shouldn't drink. It's just don't get drunk. But for me, it's not for me. I don't see any value in doing that. And I didn't see any value there.
Wow.
So.
Because usually it's peer pressure.
Yep.
At 20 years older, all your friends are drinking, I'm sure they're ridiculed you and stuff.
I got some of that, especially in high school. But, and just the way I was wired or whatever.
Jesus boy.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jesus boy. But you know, if you guys know, if someone's really pressuring you and you come back with things like, well, why are you doing that? Show me, tell me why it's good. They don't want to have that discussion. And so if you're strong, if you show weakness and whatever, but I was blessed in that standpoint to be able to just see things that way.